Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Kuf Chaf Gimel 123. We are on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Beis Amud Beis. We started yesterday the 17th perek of Maseches Shabbos, and our topic is going to be over the course of this perek the topic of Muksa. Chachamim prohibited moving certain items on Shabbos. Today we're going to be learning together the history of Muksa, where the Gzera, the rabbinical decree, in terms of moving particular items on Shabbos. There was a point in time where the Gzera was really expanded to nearly everything. One was not allowed to basically move anything on Shabbos with limitation. And then scale back on the Gzera where they minimized, they allowed the movement of certain items. All this will be explained in much greater detail over the course of this morning's daf. We saw a Mishnah yesterday which gave us the basic rules regarding Muksa. The Mishnah opened up with Kol HaKelim, that when it comes to utensils, like big chests, like Shita, Tevel, Migdal, these large chests, so they're not going to be muksa. On top of that, the doors of them are not going to be muksa as well. So we discussed a little bit about that yesterday in the Gemara. And then the Mishnah gave a total of 8 different examples of items that a person can take on Shabbos in order to enjoy Shabbos. So let's say for the first example of the Mishnah is that a person can take a hammer because he wants to break open the nuts. So he wants to eat shelled nuts. He wants to shell the nuts. And so he needs to break them open. So he can take a hammer to do so. Now, a hammer, obviously, is a tool. And typically, a hammer is used for building. And so a hammer is what we would call a mukta machmas, I'm sorry, klishim lachta leser. That it's, generally speaking, a kli that's designated for something that is prohibited on Shabbos. A klishim lachta leser, our Mishnah teaches us, you could use in order to break open a nut. And that's the first of many examples the Mishnah goes through numerous examples of taking these tools, these instruments, which are generally used for Isurim, and you could use them for Heter. Okay? Well, the Mishnah does not give us the rules. The Mishnah does not give us categories. The Mishnah doesn't organize the information for us. The Mishnah just simply says, these are the things that you could use on Shabbos. So over the course of this morning, so we're going to be learning categories and rules and all the information is going to be much more organized over the course of today's daf. Let's get underway. We are at the two dots on Kuf Chaf Beis Amud Beis towards the bottom of the Amud. It's about 7-8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. No tell Adam Kornos, the person could take a hammer. So I'm Rav Yehuda Kornos Shal Agozim Lefasei Abos Agozim. So Rav Yehuda offers a pshat in the Mishnah, and that is when we're talking about a hammer, we're not talking about a hammer that you got from the storage room. We're talking about a hammer that was designated for the breaking open of nuts. It was a kitchen tool. It wasn't a hardware tool. So aval shenafachim lo. But Rav Yehuda says that if we're talking about a hammer that you got from the shed, from the tool shed, you can't use that on Shabbos. That's moksa. So clearly Rav Yehuda is of the position that if it's a klisha malachta leiser, where its main designation is that it's going to be used for that a prohibited activity on Shabbos, so then also, so one is not allowed to use such a hammer on Shabbos, even though he's using it for something which is totally mutter. You're allowed to eat nuts on Shabbos, obviously. It's part of Oneg Shabbos. But nevertheless, according to Rav Yehuda, you cannot use a standard hammer. You can only use a kitchen tool. So Amale Rabba, let me ata sefer diktani. So Rava says, look, as far as the first example in the Mishnah, perhaps you could suggest such a pshat. But Rava says, but as you go through the Mishnah, you're going to see all the examples given in the Mishnah. Because in the Mishnah, in addition to the hammer, there are many tools that are mentioned in the Mishnah, a total of 8 in total. And some of them are just inescapably tools that are meant to be used for Isser. So he says, for example, so it says later in the Mishnah, Es arachas ves hamalgez, or mazleg, lasesa lav lakatan. So in the Mishnah, we talk about some sort of winnowing shovel, some sort of pitchfork, and the Mishnah says that you could use it in order to feed your child. So rachas umalgeiz mimi achti lelekatan. These aren't kitchen tools. These are regular tools that are used in the garden. So and the Mishnah says that you're allowed to use them on Shabbos in order to feed your child. So ela marava kornishol nafachim lefatzei bosa gozim. So Rabba goes now and gives a different shot in the Mishnah. When the Mishnah talks about a hammer, it's talking about a hammer from the tool shed. It's talking about the hammer that would be used by the blacksmith. So, and you could take that hammer and you could break open the nuts with that hammer. Kasavar. And obviously, now Rabba is in opposition to the position of Rav Yehuda. And Rabba's of the opinion that a davar, as we turn to the top of Kuf Chagim Amad Aleph, davar shemalachtu le'isr le'tzarach gufo mutter. That if it's something designated for Israel, like all the examples of the Mishnah, like the hammer of the blacksmith and all the other examples of the Mishnah, if it is letzarech, if you're using it, tzarech gufo means you're using it for an activity which is mutter on Shabbos, like breaking open a nut. So mutter, so you could take these items and use them for these purposes. That is Shitas Rabba, and the Gemara is going to be now discussing. Eis ve'abai l'Rabba, so a challenge from Abai to Rabba, Maduch im yesh bashum, metaltanosa v'im ein, v'im lav in metaltanosa. So we start with the example of the Maducha. The Maducha is some sort of pestle, where you grind spices inside of it. So certainly it's a kli, shemalach l'lis, or what you typically do in this Maducha, is you do schika, is you grind. It's a subcategory of the Malach of Tochen. And so clearly this is a klisha malachto le'isser. Now, the Mishnah says that if there is chunks of garlic there, that was already ground up, obviously, you can't grind it up on Shabbos. So if there are chunks of garlic over there, so then you are allowed to move it. But if there are no, if there is no garlic on the pestle, so then you're not allowed to move it. Now, over here, it is a klisha malach le'isser, as we've already established. The only allowance to move it if there's actual garlic on top of it. But if there is no garlic on it, so you can't move it. Now, why not? Meaning, according to the shita of Rabba, which is that a klisha malach le'isser, you're allowed to move le'tzarech gufo, if you're using it for something which is permitted on Shabbos, so you're allowed to move it. So why would this Mishnah say you're not allowed to move it? So it could very well be that the author of this Mishnah that we just quoted is Reb Nechemya. Reb Nechemya, we already cited earlier in the Masechta, and we're going to see him a number of times here in this Perek. And Reb Nechemya takes the most hard-line position as it relates to Muksa. And that is that if I have a Kli, it can only be used for its main purpose. Once you've identified what the main utility is of a kli, you can only use it for that, and you cannot use it for any other purpose. That means to say that according to Reb Nechemya, if the main purpose of this kli, of this pestle, is for grinding, it can only be used for grinding, and you cannot go ahead and be creative and use it for anything else, and it is going to be consistently muksa on Shabbos. And so once there's a shita like that, Reb Nechemya, we don't pass like Reb Nechemya, but once there's a shita like that, so you take a Mishnah that we just cited, which tells you that you're not allowed to move the pestle under any circumstance, unless there's actual garlic on there, so you're not allowed to move it under any circumstance, then you can just simply align that Mishnah, that Braisa, with the shita of Reb Nechemya. Eitzvei, the Gemara now is going to be challenging again, based on a Mishnah in Beitza. Mishnah in Beitza talks about an Eli, Ayin, Lamed Yod. It's a large cutting board, but it's not so much a cutting board. It's a board in which you grind on it as well. So much like the pestle, it's used primarily for grinding. And then the first part of the Mishnah, which is in the parentheses, which we don't have to cite over here. It's not relevant to our discussion. Vishavin. Now they agree. They being Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree. Shim katzav alav basar she'asul ataltala. That after you go ahead and you cut up the meat on it, you're not allowed to move it after that point in time. The Mishnah over here is talking about using the Eli on Yontif. Now this is a Mishnah in Beitza, so it's talking about on Yontif. So it's talking about using the Eli on Yontif, and you're allowed to cut meat on it. Now according to Beis Hillel, you're allowed to cut meat on it because of Simchas Yontif, meaning it is a muksa item. It is an item that's primarily used for pounding, for grinding. But nevertheless, for Simchas Yontif, you can go ahead and you can cut meat on top of it. And after you cut meat on top of it, so after that point in time, also letatalo, you're not allowed to move it. And once again, the question becomes, according to Rabba, even though it's a klisha malach l'isser, but Rabba says that a klisha malach l'isser, you're allowed to move letzarech gufo. So why would the Mishnah Beitza say that after usage, you cannot use it at all, you cannot move it at all? And again, that becomes difficult now for the sheet of Rabba. So sabr l'shanu leke Reb Nechemya. Now, at first, the answer could have been simply, okay, that Mishnah is going like the sheet of Reb Nechemya. But came into Shamalei Lahad Amr of Chinna Bar Shamayim Mishmei Derava Kol Modim B'Sichi Zairi Missouri. They came into Kapit Alayim Miyachil Luhu Makom Hachinam Miyachil Makom. The Gemara says, but I'm going to give a different answer. A different answer based on the Shita of Rav Chinna Bar Shamaya. Now, he says in the name of Rav that when it comes to instruments like Sichi Zairi and Missouri. Now, what these things are, Rashi himself is slightly unsure. Rashi quotes a couple of pshatim. I'll just share with you Rashi's first pshat, and that is that these are instruments that are used for the dying, for the act of dying. Dying, D-Y. So, Klit Savayinhen, says Rashi. Okay, these are dyer's tools. Now, these are, whatever they may be, however you want to define them, the point is that these are expensive tools that are used for the process of dying. And miyache lehu makom, and a special place is designated for them, meaning that the only way that the dyer would take them out is only for the purposes of dying. He would not, in a pinch, use these tools for anything else. And so now we have a category. I'm sure for those of you who have learned the halachas of muktzah, you've heard of this. We now have a new category, and that is that it's muktzah machmas chisaron kis, meaning that these things are valuable to the owner, so valuable that he has a special place where he stores it. He will not use it for any other purpose other than its intended purpose. So, for these dying instruments of the Sichi Zairi Mizore, so Kevin de Kapit Alayu, so since the person is so machbid, he's so particular about them, so he has a designated area for these items, and these items on Shabbos are going to be muksa under all circumstances. You cannot use it on Shabbos or on Yontiv, not even for an act which is mutter. So now what we're going to say over here is for the Eli, we're going to say the same thing as well. It is a kli that is muksa machmas chisaron kis. It is so it is so significant to the owner that he will not use it for anything else. And as a result of that, it is muksa under all circumstances, and you cannot use it sarach gufa, sarach makama. Okay, so what we really introduced ourselves to now to is a new category of muksa and a way of resolving the Mishnah regarding Eli. And that is that when it comes to the Mishnah of Eli, so it is muksa machmas tisaron kis, and so therefore, even if I subscribe to the Shita of Rabba, which we do, that a klisha malachta le'iser is, you're allowed to be metaltal at tzarech gufo, and in just a little bit we'll also learn about tzarech makomo, although we haven't learned that yet, so you're allowed to move at tzarech gufo, but that's only klisha malachta le'iser, that's only a standard kli. But if it's the kind of kli that's so special and so unique that the person only takes it out under certain circumstances, so then bechlalu chlal, you cannot move it, even within the Shita of Rabba. Now, by the way, this answers up the Mishnah in Eli. How far back does it answer up? Does it also answer up the Mishnah on Meducha as well? So Rashi says yes. You can see Rashi inside. Rashi, short Rashi, but significant. So Hani Nami, these as well. Rashi says the Eli and the Meducha. Meaning we can go back not only to the Mishnah regarding Eli, that Mishnah Beitza, but we can go back to the Brisa on the top of the Amud, the case of the Meducha as well. Meaning once we introduce ourselves to this new category of Muksa Machmas, Chisaron Kis, so we could say that both the Eli and the Meducha fall under this category of Muksa Machmas, Chisaron Kis, and that's why you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos, even let's start Gufo. Continuing in the Gemara. Itmar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kornashol Zahavim, Shaninu. Now back to our hammer. Now, we have already established a machlokis amongst the Amorim, whether we're talking about a hammer, kitchen tool hammer, or a hammer, the one that you get from the tool shed. So that was a machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabba. Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be a kitchen tool hammer. Rabba says it could even be the hammer from the tool shed. So here, Rabbi Chir Ba'aba, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, is going to basically be aligned with the Shita of Rabba, that the hammer that we're describing over here is a hammer from the tool shed, but they're going to have a, within this position, there's going to be even more nuance. Corner shows Zahavim Shaninu. So he says that we're talking about a hammer, the hammer of Zahavim, the hammer that belongs to the goldsmith. That means to say, and Rashi over here explains, the hammer that's owned by the goldsmith, so his hammer is obviously very precious to him. On the other hand, it's okay if it gets a little bent out of shape. Rashi writes over here, Corner shows Zahavim Mafapi de Kapital Alektsas. The owner of this hammer, the goldsmith's hammer, he's makbid on it, but a little bit. Rashi writes, "Shitzar shehei chalak l'radei tasim." Now he needs the head of the hammer to be smooth because he's flattening out metal. But afilo hachi kevin shematakin ayideh hakash shemakal asdan lo maxi lei. So, but over here, let's say it gets a little bend in it, so no problem at all. You take the hammer and you hit the anvil with it, and it'll straighten out, and it's easy to straighten out. So over here, according to Rav Yochanan, the Kornishol Zahavim, you're allowed to use on Shabbos to open up your nuts. It gets a little bit of bent. You will not get bent out of shape. However, if it's a hammer, on the other hand, that mamish a person is really, really worried about, so that you're not allowed to use. Rav Shemin Bar Abba Amar Kornishol Besamim Shaninu. Now, Rav Shemin Bar Abba says that we can even be talking about the hammer that is used to grind up the besamim, the spices. Now, that is a hammer that a person is very particular over, and he does not want that hammer to be dirtied. In other words, it's used for delicate items. And so, in terms of level of being makpid, so the person is going to be more makpid regarding the cornish of besamim. And so now the Gemara just simply grades everybody on a curve. Man da'amr de besamim kol shekein de zahavim. Now, if you're open to the idea of using the hammer of besamim, you're certainly going to be open to the idea of using the hammer of the zahavim. But man da'amr shel zahavim aval de besamim kapit alayu. But not the other way around. Meaning Rav Yochanan is quoted as saying that you can only use on Shabbos the cornish shel zahavim. So there is a hakpada, but there's a small hakpada. But when it comes to the cornish shel besamim, where there's a greater hakpada, so then Rav Yochanan would not allow a person to use that on Shabbos. Meaning, according to Rav Yochanan, the cornish shel besamim would fall under the category of mufsa machmas chisaron kis. Okay, so gradations in terms of what kind of hammer a person is going to be makbid over. Vesakush vesakarkar. Okay, so far this morning we are starting to learn our categories together of muksa. We've gone over muksa machmas, klisha malachta leser. We went over the idea of a muksa machmas chisaron kis. And now we are going to be speaking briefly on the topic of tiltul min hatzad. Tana Rabbanan, we're going to be learning a braisa, pagash etamna betevin. So let's say we took a fig. The fig is not ripe. It's not fully ripe yet. And we did hatmana. We insulated it in tevin. We learned already a parak about hatmana, but that's vis-a-vis cooking. This is not cooking. This is just simply putting the fig in the grains, in the straw. And so that because it needs time to ripen some more. And also, we're talking about a cake that was insulated in coals. So over here, the tevin and the gachalim are muksa on Shabbos. That goes without saying. Over here, the question becomes, can the fig be taken out of the straw, and can the cake be taken out of the gachalim? This is not an issue of cooking. This is just simply an issue of muksa. So, im megula miksasa mota latautala v'im lavasar latautala. So if it is somewhat exposed already, so then you can take it out. Meaning, if the way that you can take it out of either the straw or the coals is taking it out without having to move the straw or the coals, so that would be acceptable. But if you need to move the straw or the coals in order to get it out, you cannot do it. And Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai Omer Tofim Bekusha Bekarkar Vehin Min Aros Me Alehem. Shitas Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai is that as long as you can take a toothpick and get out the fig or get some sort of some other instrument in order to get the cake. And even though it means that the straw is going to be moved, but you're not directly moving the straw. In other words, you took the toothpick, you stabbed the fig, and now you're pulling it out. Now, yes, it's true that the straw is going to get moved in order to allow the fig to come out. And the same thing is true regarding the cake. You're stabbing the cake, you're pulling it out of the coals, and yes, the coals are going to move. But you're not directly moving the coals, nor are you directly moving the straw. This is what is called an halacha tiltul min hatzad. And Rav Elazar ben Tadai is clearly of the position that tiltul min hatzad is mutter legamri. So I'm Rav Nachman, halacha ka Rav Elazar ben Tadai. And Rav Nachman says that's the accepted halacha. That tiltul min hatzad would be mutter on Shabbos. The Meimah, the Sefer Rav Nachman tiltul min hatzad lo shmei tiltul. So you mean to tell me that Rav Nachman holds that tiltul min hatzad is in fact going to be mutter? So Vaham Rav Nachman, I pulga. So the Gemara says, but we do have a halachic statement that was made by Rav Nachman regarding the pugla. Pugla, some sort of vegetable, some sort of root. It could be a radish. Whatever the point is that it's got a funny shape. It's got like a V shape to it. And what happens now is that let's say it's in the ground, and the reason why I put it in the ground, we've seen this already a number of times in our Masechta, is I put it back into the ground after I plucked it out of the ground. It's totally detached from the ground. But I put it back into the dirt because I want to preserve it, right? They didn't have refrigeration back in the day, so the way they preserve the vegetables is that they just simply put it back in the ground. And we already discussed that that's not considered planting. Your intention here is not to plant it. And so therefore there's no iser, there's no agricultural concerns whatsoever. And there are no Shabbos concerns as well. Meaning when you're picking it out of the ground, you're not pulling something out of the ground. It's not an act of tolesh because it already was plucked out of the ground. The only consideration that we're having right now is the following. is that when you are now going to pull it out of the earth, you're going to be moving some of the dirt. And is that going to be an issue on Shabbos? So Rav Nachman is quoted here as saying, well, it depends how you put it into the ground. If you put the V-shaped root into the ground where the pointy side is downward, so that means to say that when you pick it up from the ground, you don't have to move any dirt, so that would be fine. On the other hand, if the wider side is in the ground and the narrow side is facing up, and now as I'm pulling up the pointy edge of the V, so now I'm going to necessarily have to move dirt, so that you can't do. Now, the moving of the dirt over here is clearly tiltum and atzah. You're not directly moving the earth. And yet, Rav Nachman is quoted as saying that you can't do that. We have now a steerer within Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman, moments earlier, was quoted as saying the halacha fazik Rav Elazar ben Tadai, that tiltum and atzah is going to be mutter. Now we have Rav Nachman saying that tiltum and atzah is going to be aser. So the Gemara's response, very simple, hadabei Rav Nachman me'ahu. Okay. So Rav Nachman, at one point, it was of the position that tiltum and atzah was aser. But then Rav Nachman changed his position and now holds that tiltum and atzah is in fact going to be mutter. We're halfway down in Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, continuing in the Gemara. Machet Shol Yad Lito Bo V'Chulei. Shalach Le Rav Bered Rav Le Rav Yosef Yalamdin Rabbeinu Machet Shenital Charara U'Uksa Mahu. So we have a discussion between Rabba and Rav Yosef, and he says, "Please teach us." Then when we have a needle, right? A machad is a needle. Shenito charara o uksa. And let's say either the eyelet of the needle or the point of the needle were taken off of the needle. What would be the status of that needle? Meaning, is it a clear? Is it not a clear? Now, just as a brief introduction, in order for us to really understand the upcoming Gemara, so when we are discussing the issue of Muksa, here is one of the assumptions that's a premise in our discussion. And that is that in order for something to be able to be used on Shabbos, so much of our discussion has been centered around what is its main purpose. Is it something which is Mutter? Is it something which is Asur? Or is it something where I'm so particular about the item that I only use it for that item? Okay, so that's been a lot of our discussion. However, if we could take even a further step backwards and say that when we're talking about using an item on Shabbos, that first and foremost, what it must be, it has to be a kli. It has to be a utensil that has utility. And if it is not a utensil, if it does not have the status of being a utensil, so then the question doesn't even get off the ground, meaning you can't move it at all on Shabbos. Meaning we can't then go on to ask the question, is it a kli shemalach tola iser? Is it a kli shemalach tola heter? Is it a kli that is muksa machmas chesaron kis? You can't get onto that discussion without first establishing that it's a kli. In other words, if it's something like a rock or a stone or a pebble or a stick, so ostensibly that is muksa just by virtue of the fact that it's not a keli. It's what we would call in halacha muksa machmas gufo, meaning it itself is not even a kli. Okay, and we learned earlier in the Masechta that under certain circumstances a rock can be used, and under certain circumstances twigs can be used as well. But the assumption in our Gemara right now is that in order for something to be moved on Shabbos, it has to be a keli. Now, in terms of the status of a kli, it really has now two significant arenas in halacha. One is what we're describing right now, the issue of muksa. And the other one, of course, is whether or not a kli is mekabel tumah. So we've gone over this time and again. An entire Masechta is dedicated to this topic, the Masechta Kelim. The 30 prakim of Masechta Kelim are dedicated to the topic in which when a kli is now considered functional, usable, and which point it's going to be mekabel tumah, but when a kli is broken and it does not have function, it does not have usage, it's not going to be mekabel tumah. And so what we're going to be learning right now is that let's put this as a question. Are the same parameters and definitions of a kli regarding Kabbalah Satoma going to be the same parameters and definitions of a kli as it relates to Moksa? Okay, let's put it in that and the question in that manner, and that's going to be the Gemara's discussion. Now we're going to be all discussing all this using the example of a needle. But the truth of the matter is that we could have used any kli as an example. Just happens to be that a needle is nice because there are two functional points to the needle, the point and the other side, the eyelet. And so the Gemara now wants to know that if I have a needle on Shabbos where I lost either the eyelid or I lost a point, is it no longer going to be a kli and therefore I can't move it on Shabbos? Amalei Tenisua, he says, well, let's take a look at our Mishnah, which is Machat Shel Yad L'Tolbos HaKotz. We're talking about a needle in order to remove a splinter. You got a splinter on Shabbos and you want to remove the splinter, and so you could take out a needle in order to remove the splinter. Now, let me ask you a question. This needle over here, all I need is just a pointy end. Meaning if the eyelet fell out, is it going to really affect the utility? I still can take the splinter out of my hand even though the eyelet is out. So it seems to be, from the example that's given the Mishnah, is that even though the eyelet fell off, one could still use the needle because my interest right now is to simply remove the splinter. Eisvei, the Gemara challenges based on the following. The Mishnah in Kelim says that if I have a needle where either the eyelet or the point fell off the needle, it is no longer being mekabel tuma. It is considered now a broken needle and no longer subject to kabbalas tuma. That is the Mishnah in Kelim. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Shabbos Karamis Tumas Kli Masa Beina Leinyan Shabbos Mita Dechazi Beina. And so Abaye says, I don't necessarily have to give in to this assumption. Meaning that the definition of a Kli Lagabe Kabbalas HaTuma is not necessarily going to be the same definition of a Kli regarding Muksa. When it comes to a Kli for Kabbalas HaTuma, you need a Kli Maise. However, when it comes to Shabbos, I just need something which is functional. Now, exactly what the difference is between a Kli Maise versus Midi Dechaze, okay, it's a little bit difficult to see the differences between the two, but Abaye's general premise is that the two definitions of Kalim for Shabbos and for Kabbalas HaTuma do not necessarily need to correlate. V'hanami chazi l'mishka bei pekotz. In other words, over here, if all I need this needle to do is just simply take out a splinter, so the fact that it's missing an eyelet is not a big deal, you can still move it on Shabbos. Amar Rava, Manda Kamosiv, Shapa Kamosiv. Rava responds back to Abaye, and Rava says, no, I fundamentally disagree with you. I feel that the definitions of Kli Lagabe Kabbalas Tuma and Kli Lagabe Muksa are, in fact, parallel, they're running hand in hand. Midil Inyan Tuma Lav Manahu, Linyan Shabbos Nami Lav Manahu. If it's not a Kli Lagabe, the Halachas of Tuma, it's not going to be a Kli regarding Muksa and Shabbos. So Meisvei, so the Gemara says, okay, but let's hear now the Braisa. The Braisa says, Machat, Bein Nekuva, Bein Shein Nekuva, whether the needle has a hole or has an eyelet, or whether it does not have an eyelet, Mutar L'Tautal B'Shabbos. You're allowed to move it on Shabbos. V'lo Amr Nekuva, Ela L'Inyan Tumma Bavad. And as far as Nekuva is concerned, it only significant Lagabe, the halachas of Kalim and Tumma, and Kabbalah Satumma. So here in the Braisa, what we seem to be doing is making exactly the distinction that Abaye said. That the definitions of a Kli Lagabe Shabbos are not necessarily running parallel with the definition of a Kli regarding Tuma. The Braisa is in strong support of Abaye, and meanwhile, for Rava, this Braisa is going to be very difficult. Tirgama Abaye Aliba de Rava. So now Abaye steps in to defend Rava, and here's one of those moments again, where even though Abaye and Rava are arguing, Abaye over here is not interested in the argument, he's interested in obtaining the truth. If he can interpret this Braisa in defense of Rava, he will do so. In fact, he does. And that is Begumi Askinan. That over here, what we're talking about is the following. We're talking about not where the needle broke, meaning the assumption is that we're talking about where we had a full needle and it broke. He says, no. We're talking about a needle in its developmental stages, meaning we shaped the metal into a needle. Gume just simply means is that we had the raw material metal and we shaped it as a needle, but we haven't put the eyelet in yet. So over here, the chances are is that you could be of the position that right now this particular needle doesn't need an eyelet. However, if the needle was already a finished product and it had an eyelet to it and the eyelet broke, so what do you do with it? You just simply throw it in. You throw it into the garbage. You throw it with the other your other scrap metal. And you're not going to use it anymore. So this Bryce over here that's describing the needle and the Bryce that says that if it doesn't have an eyelet for Shabbos, you can move it. The Bryce was only describing, this is Abai's defense of Rava. The Bryce was only describing the metal as it was being developed as a needle. And before the eyelet was put in, So the manufacturer decided, you know what? We're making right now a line of needles that don't need an eyelet. Under those circumstances, now it can have the status of being a kli. If, however, an eyelet was already made into the needle and then it broke off, according to everybody, meaning both in terms of Hilchus, Kabbalah's Tumah, and in terms of Halachas of Muksan, it's no longer going to be a kli, and we have, in fact, a defense of Rava. Okay, so the question of the definition of the kli, whether or not the definitions of Tumah and Shabbos necessarily correlate with one another. So Abaye and Rava are debating this issue, really fundamental issue. Abaye says that the definitions do not necessarily need to correlate, whereas Rav is of the opinion that no, they do necessarily need to correlate. Whatever is a kli legabe Shabbos is going to be kli legabe muksa as well. Just makes our homework a lot more now, because in terms of establishing whether an item is considered a kli legabe muksa, so now all we need to do is just simply run through the 30 prakim of Masechta Kelim in order to know full well what the definitions are of kelim legabe kabbalah satuma. Esuve Yunuke. A Gemara for just a little bit is going to take us off on a bit of a tangent. It is somewhat related to our discussion. The Gemara over here discusses the following. I'm going to present the Gemara like Rashi. Asuve Yunuke, Rashi over here gives the following definition of what we're describing right now. Rashi writes, it's two lines from the bottom, Lahachlik Seder Eivarav, that what happens with the newborn is that the newborn needs a little bit of chiropractic manipulation. This was the assumption back in the day. And so basically what you had to do is you had to realign the baby. Right? Rashi, Lahachlik Seder Eivarav, Kishu Nolad Eivarav, Misparkin, Vitzarkli Yashvan. So the joints are a little bit out of line, and they need to be put back in line again. So now this is not life threatening. In other words, neither the condition nor the treatment are life threatening, because if it was life threatening, so then we wouldn't be having a discussion. Everyone understands. But over here, however, it must have been some sort of therapy that certainly assisted, wasn't absolutely necessary. On Shabbos, is this okay or is this not okay? Machlokas Amarayim. Asuva Yenuka, Rav Nachman Asa, Rav Sheshes Shari. So we have a debate between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman takes the stricter position, Rav Sheshes is Mekel. So I'm Rav Nachman, Menamin Allah Dinan. Rav Nachman says, now how do I know that it in fact is going to be permitted? Because the following in Osin, Afik Tizim B'Shabbos, one is not allowed to make a mixture, a concoction on Shabbos that and drink it that is going to induce you to vomit. Right, Epicac was popular back in the day. It's not popular anymore. So, but every self-respecting parent back in the day would have the Epicac available, so that in the event that your kid swallows something you should not have swallowed and you need to induce vomiting, so there you went ahead and you served it up to the kid. Anyway, the Afik Zin Rashi over here writes, "V'haki shosem mashkim umeki." Good. So it induces vomiting, says Rashi. Velo le refuah, but the next part of Rashi is really critical to the understanding over here. Now, this wasn't a refuah ela la harikas me'av sheyuchal la echo velishto sayom harbei. Now, Rashi says the reason why it was given is because the person would like to continue eating, but he's already full. So, what he's going to do is induce vomiting. Now, what we just described over here in Rashi sounds disgusting. And on the side of my Gemara, I just simply wrote a little note to myself: Nava brishus haTorah. Right, it sounds like behavior that is unbecoming. But nevertheless, however, let's just assume that this was a quote unquote normal practice. So the kedamrina, sorry, lishtos hayom harbe kedamrina beperachavis va'avagav de lo gazer by mishum schika samemanim dehalav lerefuahi also mishum demetakin gavra. So here we get to the critical point of Rashi over here. So within this understanding that this is not a refuah, but rather this is what's called tikkun gavra. Meaning that the person now is going to be, quote unquote, fixed. He's going to be corrected because he wanted to eat more and he just simply needs a way in order to regain his appetite. So, again, I know it's disgusting. So so what he'll do is he'll induce vomiting in order to regain his appetite. And so this falls under the category of tikkun gavra. And by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah says that ein osin afiktizim b'Shabbos, as we know on the top of the Amud Beis, so that means to say that tikkun gavra is going to be prohibited on Shabbos. So, Now bringing it back to our discussion of realigning the newborn. So this falls under the category of Tikkun Gavra, and this is the same thing, it should be Aser. So Rav Sheshet Hasam Lav Orche Hacha Orche. So Rav Sheshet will tell you, look, I could draw a simple distinction between the cases over there. In the case of the induction of vomiting, so that's not normal, that's not normal behavior, and that's why it's prohibited. Over here, when it comes to realigning the newborn, so he feels that that's normal behavior, and therefore it should be mutter. So I'm Rav Sheshet Manami Naladidnan, and Rav Sheshet says, look, let me show you that Tikkun Gavra is totally okay, because Machal Shel Yadli Tobos HaKotz, so the Mishnah says that you're allowed to take a needle on Shabbos in order to remove a splinter. The Gemara assumes that the removal of the splinter does not fall under the category of refuah. This is not medicine. This is not therapy. This is just simply tikkun gavra. And the allowance, the underlying assumption of the Mishnah is that there's an allowance to go ahead and to remove this splinter from you because that's tikkun gavra, and therefore it's okay. So over here, aligning the baby, manipulating the baby is okay. That's tikkun gavra, and therefore it's okay. To which Rav Nachman responds. So Rav Nachman, Hasam Pakid, Hachalal Pakid. He says there's a difference between the cases. In terms of the splinter, it's not part and parcel of what you are. It's something external. You're just simply removing something that's already external from you. On the other hand, when it comes to the manipulation of the baby, so you're aligning the joints of the baby. You're manipulating the spine of the baby. That's something which is intrinsic to the baby, and that would be prohibited. Okay, so Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet go back and forth in terms of whether or not you're allowed to do any kind of alignment with the baby, and it's not really related to our discussion, but the removing of the splinter may have some influence on this discussion, and that's why the Gemara brought it in over here. And now we head back to the topics of Muksa. We're on the Mishnah. Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Beis Kana Shal Zesim Im Yesh Kesher Barosho Mekabotoma V'im Lav Eim Mekabotoma. That when I have a reed that was taken from the olive tree, and it's got a knot on the head of it, so it's Mekabotoma. Otherwise, it's not Mekabotoma. Benkach Uvekach Nito B'Shabbos. Either way, it could be used on Shabbos. It could be moved on Shabbos. Now, as far as the purpose of the Kana Shel Zesim, so what you do is you harvest the olives, you put them in a large vat, and what's going to end up happening is that the juices are going to start oozing. When eventually they are good and juicy, you're going to move them over to the press, and you're going to press them in order to extract the oil. And the purpose of this Kana is basically to test and to mix and to see whether or not the olives are juicy enough. And on Shabbos, the Mishnah says, the Kana Shel Zesim. So in terms of Kabbalah Satoma, it matters whether it has a knot or does not have a knot, which we're going to explain in just a moment. But vis-a-vis Shabbos, so if you want to use it on Shabbos, obviously for a purpose that is mutter, so the Mishnah says you are allowed to do so. Now, let's go back to Tumah for just a moment, and we're going to spend just a quick minute discussing the halachas of Tumah. This reed that is taken from the olive tree, so obviously it's kli eitz, and being that it does not have a receptacle to it, so it's a staff, it's a stick, so it's called pshute kli eitz. And so we know, because every time we discuss the halachas of Tumah as it relates to wood, so a simple distinction is made with wood, and that wood, in order to be mekabel Tumah, it has to have a toch, it has to have a receptacle. If it does not, if it's pshute kli eitz, if it's just simply some sort of flatware made out of wood, it's not mekabel tumah. And so the question over here, really simple. How can our kana shel zesim be mekabel tumah? The Mishnah said that if it has a knot, right, knot, K-N-O-T, if it has a knot towards the top of it, it's mekabel tumah. Well, why? Pshute kli eitz. Am I pshute kli eitz? Who pshute kli eitz and mekabel tumah? My tamei dumei desak b'inan. And we know because we learned it from the halachas of sak. A sak has to be something with a toke. Same thing is true regarding kli eitz as well. Anyway, so why is it mekabel tumah? So tana mishmei derav Nechemya b'shar shemahapich v'zesim hofcho v'robo. So the Gemara says because this is a reed. It is a hollow reed and with a knot at the end of it. So what you could do is that you can basically draw the olive oil. And you could see whether or not the olive oil is good or not. By virtue of the fact that it has a knot on the other end in it, so that means to say that you can basically, almost like a dipstick, that you put in the that you check the oil, not exactly over here, but it's similar. So you're basically now seeing the oil on the kana, and because it has a knot at the end, so the oil won't just simply slide off the other side. And so under those circumstances, it kind of can be viewed as a toch, and that's why it's going to be a mekabel tuma. Okay. We go back and we head back to the topic of muksa. Rabbi Yosi Omer, we're up to the next Mishnah. Rabbi Yosi Omer, kol akel nitalim chutz min amasar gadol v'yaseh shal machareisha. Rabbi Yosi says that all kelim can be moved on Shabbos, meaning once it has the status of being a kli, so it can be moved on Shabbos with two notable exceptions. The large saw and yaseh shal machareisha, that's the peg that's used by the plow. That's the peg that's used for the plow, right? The plow that plows the field. So it's got a large peg, that's the actual metal piece that goes into the ground that does the actual plowing, so that cannot be moved on Shabbos. So with these two notable exceptions, all other kelim are allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Now, Amar Rabbi Nachman, Hai Uchla Dekatzrei, Kiyase Shamachareisha Damya. And the Gemara now is going to go over what else falls under these categories of these really important pieces of equipment that person does not use for anything else. So what else falls under this category? So Rashi over here writes that the two examples given in the Mishnah, this is an important point, I should have stressed it when we did the Mishnah, but Rashi writes in Divra Maskel Yasur Shel Machareisha that with these particular instruments that are described in the Mishnah, a person is makpid on these items, and a person sets aside a place for them, and therefore they're not used for any other purpose. In other words, they fall under the category of a kli that a person designates and is muksa machmas chisaron kis. It's, again, so valuable to him, so important to him, that he does not use it for any other utility, and therefore it is muksa machmas chisaron kis. And now the Gemara is going to give other examples of what also falls under the category of muksa machmas chisaron kis. So hai uchla dekatsre. So the uchla dekatsre, Rashi over here gives a couple of pshat and what it means. I'll just say over Rashi's first pshat, it's some sort of copper instrument that is used by the launderer. It's kind of like a shower head. The water goes through it, and the water spreads out, and you're basically able to spread over a large area of water. Maybe it's concentrated, maybe there's some pressure. Whatever the case is, it's basically an instrument used by the launderer. So that's ki yaseh shal machareisha dami. It's just like the yaseh of the machareisha, meaning it's Moksa machmas kisaron kis. Amar Abaye charva dush kafe. V'sakina de ashkavta. V'chatina de nagre ki yasa shamachareisha dami. Abaye gives three more examples. The tanner's knife, the charva dush kafe. The butcher's knife, the sakina de ishkavta. V'chatina de nagre, the carpenter's plane. So again, these are all really valuable instruments, tools of the trade, but not just standard tools. These are really important, significant tools. The owner and operator of these tools does not want to use it for any other purpose, and therefore falls under the category of a kli that is designated as it's muksa machmas chisaron kis. It's so valuable and important to him, it cannot be used under Shabbos, under any circumstance, under any situation. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. And now, if we can, introduce now the history of muksa. We are now on Kuf Chal Gimel Amud Beis here in the 17th Perek. So we're going to be given the basic history of when muksa began, and what was the introduction of muksa historically, when did it occur, and the fact that the chachamim both expanded and contracted the parameters of muksa. All this to be seen right now. Tanu Rabbanan Bishana Yu Omrim Shlosh Shekelim Talam B'Shabbos. When muksa was first introduced. Now, we will historically pinpoint exactly when this was in Jewish history. I'll give it away right now. We're talking about during the period of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, one of the Nevi'im who brought the Jewish people back into Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the second Beis Hamikdash. Ezra, together with Nehemiah, were the two predominant Nevi'im bringing the Jewish people back. And when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, so here muksa was introduced, and muksa was introduced in a very, very severe form, in a very machmir form. In fact, it was so machmir that the question was, the question was, what can't I move? But the question was basically, what can I move? In other words, muksa was so expansive that it basically covered everything except. And so the question now was, what can I move? So they can move basically three items: miksoshal devela, a knife used for the figs, and zuma l'sitran shel kedera, a skimmer, a ladle that was basically used as a skimmer for the pot, and second katana shel gabei shulchan, and a small knife that was on the table. And I know it's kind of difficult to understand. What about all the other flatwares, forks, spoons? So not exactly clear in this stage of muksa, like where these items, where these regular table items lie. It sounds like a simple reading is that they're also going to be subject to muksa as well. Anyway, and when muksa was originally laid out during this historical period of time, so muksa was so severe, it was so strict, that the only question was, what can I move? Because generally speaking, you couldn't move anything. Now, they scaled back on muksa. And hitiru, so they gave an allowance. V'chazur v'hitiru, a second allowance. V'chazur v'hitiru, a third allowance. Asher amru kol hakelim nitalim b'shabbos chutz m'masar gadol v'yaseh shamachareisha. Until they said that all kelim can be moved, except for the masar gadol and the yaseh shamachareisha. Meaning, look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is the end of the story of Muksa. Meaning, when describing the history of Muksa, the starting point of Muksa is that everything was basically Muksa, except the end point of Muksa, which is our Mishnah, that's the Mishnah of Rabbi Yossi Omer, that kol akel nitalim, that's the end of the story. Meaning, after three rounds of allowances, of heterim, so eventually we get to the point where all kelim can be moved on Shabbos. Okay. And so now, obviously, there are stages to discuss. And so what we're going to go through now in the Gemara are, what exactly are those stages that we described over here? From the point that Muksa was originally introduced during the period of Nehemiah, Ezra Nehemiah, to nowadays. Nowadays, I'm meaning at the writing of the Mishnah. So we are just historically, if you want to know, if you want to see this in terms of a historical sketch, so the beginning of the Bayis Sheni till the end of Bayis Sheni in our tradition is 420 years. The writing of the Mishnah is a couple of hundred years later. Let's put it at 100 years later, after Churban Bayis Sheni, approximately. So we're talking now of at least 500 years in which Muksa, when first introduced, was super machmir, and then it was scaled back to become mekel. Mekel to the point where our Mishnah says that kol hakelim nitalim, all utensils can be moved except for the kelim that are muksa machmas tisar and kis. And so, but there are stages. And so these stages, what exactly occurred during the stages of heter? So that's what is going to be our discussion in the Gemara Machlokes between Abaye and Rava. Ma yitir v'chazur v'yitiru v'chazur v'yitiru. So what exactly are these stages? So we're going to have two versions. We'll start with Abaye. Amar Abaye. Yitir davar shemalachta lehetel l'tzorach gufo. So, something which is a klisha malachta leheter, something which is predominantly allowed to be used on Shabbos. Now, amazing, because originally that was not allowed to be moved, meaning when Muksa was originally rolled out by the Navi Nehemiah, so you weren't even allowed to move a klisha malachta leheter. So the first heter that was, the first rollback, if you will, is that a klisha malachta leheter, you can move the tzarech gufo. V'chazur v'yitiru davash malachta leheter l'tzarech mekamo. The second round of heter is that a klisha malachta leheter, a person can move the tzarech mekamo. Now, tzarech gufo means, I need the kli for me right now for my purposes. Meaning, like the example in the Mishnah that we saw earlier this morning. Right, I need a hammer because I need to break open the nut. But right now we're not even talking about a hammer. That's a klisha malachta leheter. Right, I need a spoon because I need right now to eat cereal, and so I need the spoon right now, or I need this I need to have a soup, so I need the spoon right now. That's a klisha malachta leheter, tzarech gufo, tzarech mekamo. That's according to Abaye stage number two. So that's a second heter. So that means to say that, let's say the spoon's on the table, but right now I need the table, I need the area on the table. That's a tzarech mekamo. So that is now going to be heter number two. What about heter number three according to Abaye? V'chazur v'yitiru davar shemalachta leheter l'tzarech gufo in l'tzarech mekamo lo. In heter number three, so you're allowed to move a kli, but that's only tzarech gufo, not tzarech mekamo. V'adayin biyado achas in v'shtei yadav lo. Now that's only talking about small kelim that can be moved with one hand, but large kelim that can be moved with two hands, that you're not allowed to move. Ad she'amru kol hakelim nitalim b'shabbos v'afilu b'shtei yadayim.
And Abaye says, and then where we landed is that even kelim that are so large that you need two hands in order to move it, so that you're allowed to move as well. So these are the stages of Abaye. Now what comes out according to Abaye is that a kli shemalachta le'iser, in terms of moving it for tzorich mekomo, so that is that it never became allowed. That there was never a heter for a kli shemalachta le'iser tzorich mekomo. Amalei Rava Mechti. So Rava says, look, I disagree fundamentally with the way you're presenting the heterim. So Mechti, hitiru katani, meaning that in the Braisa, as it presents to us, it says that there was a heter, and then there was another heter. So Malei Tzarech Gufo, Malei Tzarech Mekamo. You can't break up Tzarech Gufo and Tzarech Mekamo. Meaning once the heter was given for one, it's given for the other as well. Meaning Rava says that categorically, Tzarech Gufo and Tzarech Mekamo are working within the same heter. So Ela Amarava, so Rava says, so this is the way he understands the stages of heter. Hitir davar shemalachta leheter, bein l'tzarech gufo, bein l'tzarech mekamo. That originally there was a heter for a kli shemalachto leheter, like forks, spoons, knives, and that is tzarech gufo, tzarech mekamo. Okay, so round one of heterim was that any kli shemalachto leheter you're allowed to move. And move over here meaning for both tzarech gufo and tzarech mekamo. Round number two. Chazer v'itiru mecham l'tzel. Let's say that right now one of my kelim, one of my heter kelim is outside. And it's being beaten down by the sun. Or, let's say it's raining outside and I want to bring it in from the rain. So I'm not moving the item for any purpose, meaning I don't need the item myself right now, nor do I need the place right now. I just want to save the item. So that was heter number two. Mechama l'tzel, you can move it from the sun into the shade. V'chazer v'itir, v'davar shemalach l'tzel, l'tzorech gufo, l'tzorech mekamo. And then, what you're allowed to do is the round number three is take a kli shemalachto le'iser, right, like the hammer, and move l'tzorech gufo, l'tzorech mekomo, in mecham l'tzel lo. But what you can't do is you cannot take a kli shemalachto le'iser, move it mecham l'tzel. You left your hammer outside, it's raining outside, you left your hammer outside, it's super sunny outside, and it's going to get warped by the sun. So on Shabbat, you cannot move it from the sun into the shade. And still, with all these heterim, they were only for small utensils that could be used and operated with one hand. And then, in now stage four of heterim, so now all kelim can be moved, even kelim that need two people in order to move them. Okay, so, comes out now is, between Abaye and Rava, differences in terms of how you understand the rollback of muksa. When they scale back on muksa, so there, everyone's in agreement in terms of that there were three stages, and then actually there was a fourth stage. It's just a question of how to view the rollbacks, what exactly the heterim were. And at the core of the debate between Abaye and Rava is whether or not Tzarech Mekamo and Tzarech Gufo are to be viewed categorically as one heter, or can they be broken up into two separate heterim. Abaye breaks it up into two separate heterim, and that's why for Abaye, step one is Tzarech Gufo, step number two is Tzarech Mekamo, etc., etc. Masha Enkin, according to Rava, Tzarech Gufo and Tzarech Mekamo are categorically the same heter, and so therefore, round number one is the heter for Tzarech Gufo and Tzarech Mekamo, round number two is Mecham L'tzel, round number three is Tzarech Gufo and Tzarech Mekamo for a Kli Shemalachto Le'iser, and then, according to Rava, finally, we talk about the size of the Kli. Okay, where do we land on all this? It comes out now that, according to Abaye, so you can move kelim on Shabbos, but a kli shemalachto le'iser, you cannot move l'tzorech mekomo. According to Rava, you can move all kelim on Shabbos. The only restriction, according to Rava, is a kli shemalachto le'iser, you cannot move mecham l'tzel. Okay, I know there was just a lot of information that was given. And I appreciate the fact that this is not the first time that I've gone through this, and I see it clearly. I'm hopefully presenting it clearly. But in the meantime, however, if you want to just play that back again, so you can go through the various stages of muksa and in terms of where everyone lands in terms of what is allowed. With that stated, so let's continue a little bit more this morning, because let us now see how Mishnayos work out for both Abaye and for Rava. Eisvei Abaye, Abaye challenges Rava from the following Maducha im yesh ba shum metaltan osa, v'im la v'im metaltan osa. We go back to our pesel The Brisa said, we saw this on the Amud Aleph of today's daf, that you can only move the pestle if it's got clumps of garlic on it, otherwise I'm not allowed to move it. Now, hacha b'mayiskin mecham letzel. Now, earlier this morning we said, well, the author of that Brisa could be Rabbi Nechemiah. We also said, possibly earlier this morning, that it could be that it's muksam machmas chisaron kiss. But the Gemara now is suggesting, look, we don't have to say any of that. We could say that standard klisha malachta le'isr, and the reason why the Brisa says you're not allowed to move it is because we're talking about michama letzel, which according to Rava, that still is restricted. You're not allowed to take a klisha malachta le'isr, move it michama letzel. So that's a way to deal with the Brisa. And Eitzvei, the Gemara challenges again from another Brisa, v'shav mishim katzav alev, alav basar sha'asol atalto, we're going back to our Eli. Right? It's basically a pounding board. It's used primarily for Isser. It's used for Tochen. And it, Brisa says that once you cut the meat, after you cut the meat on Yontif, which you're allowed to do because of Simchas Yontif, but after that, you're not allowed to move it. And everyone agrees, both Bisham and Bisolo say you're not allowed to move it. So, Hachanami, Mechama Letzel. So, Rabbi will say in his defense, yeah, that is talking about moving it from the sun into the shade. Amar Rav Chanina, Bemei Nechemya Ben Chaklai Nishne Mishnazu. Okay, now, according to Rabbi Chanina, he has basically a different approach in terms of how to deal with this Mishnah. And that is that this Mishnah was taught during the days of Rabbi Nechemiah. As we already, I said Rabbi Nechemiah, I'd like to edit just a little bit. I meant the Navi Nechemiah. Meaning that as we already pointed out, there was a history of Muksa. And when Muksa was originally rolled out, it was rolled out in this very strict fashion. And what the Gemara now is telling us is that this Mishnah that we just learned, the Mishnah regarding the Eli, and perhaps the Mishnah regarding the Meducha as well, so this Mishnah was taught during the period of Nechemiah ben Chachliai, meaning when Muksa was originally rolled out. So Dichsiv, and now, the Pasuk in Sefer Nechemiah, Bayamim Ahim, Bayimim Ahim, Arisa B'Yehuda, Dorchin Gasos, B'Shabbos, and Mavim Ha'aremos. And so Nechemiah says that when he walked around Eretz Yisrael, when the new new settlers come in from Babel and Eretz Yisrael, and as we've gone over time and again, a small representation of the Jewish people actually made Aliyah, actually went from Babel to Eretz Yisrael in order to rebuild the second base of Mikdash, and they weren't the firmest of the bunch. All right, we've gone over this a number of times. Intermarriage was prevalent. They intermarried one with another, and Chilul Shabbos was also prevalent. And so Ezra Nechemiah had to try their best to correct. And so what they did in terms of intermarriage, the Gemara discussed that elsewhere in terms of what they tried to do to get them to no longer remain with their non-Jewish spouses. In terms of Shabbos, so that is our discussion here in the 17th Perek. And what we're learning together is that in order to correct, in order to adjust for Shabbos, so the Navi Nechemiah went all the way to the other extreme. It's like the Rambam in terms of correction of Midos. Meaning that he went all the way to the other extreme where Muksa becomes now so machmir, so stringent, that basically you cannot pick up a single kli on Shabbos, not a kli that is malach v'lisr, not a kli malach v'lehetr, you can't move any kli. With only three kelim that were allowed to move, as we discussed earlier. Good. All this is now the history of Muksa. But now we're going to go one step further, meaning what Rabbi Chanina is proposing is that these Mishnayos that talk about you're not allowed to move these kelim at all on Shabbos, you know what we're going to say? It's a really an interesting position. We're going to say that these Mishnayos go all the way back to the Navi Nechemiah, which in of itself is super interesting because it gives us a sense that there are Mishnayos that are really historically old. Meaning, if this is a Mishnah going back to the period of Nechemiah, we're having a Mishnah that takes us all the way back to the beginning of Bayis Sheni. And it only begs the question, when did the Mishnayos start taking form and shape? Right, when did the Mishnah start looking like a Mishnah? Okay, so, and obviously there was always Torah Shabbat Peh, that's critical, that is fundamental. Torah Shabbat Peh goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, but in terms of when the Mishnahs start taking form and shape and looking like the Mishnahs that we're learning nowadays, when did it start? So, at least we have over here a position in the Gemara that it goes all the way back to the beginning of Bai Sheni. Anyway, so according to Rabbi Chanina, the Mishnah over here goes all the way back, and that's why the Mishnah says you're not allowed to move the Eli, you're not allowed to move the Meducha. Why? Because we're already at the first stage of Muksa, when it was at its most severe. Amar Rav Elazar is going to also subscribe to this idea. The Mishnah of Kanim and Maklos and Glusteras and Meducha Kulan Kodem Hatars Kalim Nishnu. They were all before the allowance of Kalim, meaning that I'm going to show you four Mishnah, says Rav Elazar, that take us all the way back to the period of Rem Nechemya. And what we'll do now is we'll just simply run through the four Mishnayos, and we will see how these Mishnayos are really machmir as it relates to Muksa. Number one, Kalim Nishan. Number one, the Mishnah of Kanan. Didnan, the Mishnah in Menachos. The Mishnah of Menachos is giving a description of the Lechem Apanim that are stacked in two columns, six high. 12 Lechem Apanim altogether. Lo Sidor Kanim Velo Nitelen Doches HaShabbos. The putting in of the racks are not going to override Shabbos, meaning you cannot move the racks. Now, the reason why you cannot move the racks is because they're Muksa. Maklos Didnan. And the Mishnah regarding Maklos Dakin Chalakim Hayu, Shamu Manichim Aktefo Ba'akatev Chaver Betolo Mafshit, in terms of flaying the carbon Pesach. So you would have these sticks that would be used, and I put one end of the stick on my shoulder, you put the other end of your stick on your shoulder. We would have the carbon Pesach hanging on these sticks, and we would flay the carbon Pesach. However, Rebbe Lazar Omer, Arbasar Shechalios B'Shabbos, if let's say the 14th day falls out on a Shabbos, so Meiniach Yado Akatev Chaver V'Yad Chaver Akatevo B'Tola U'Mafshit. We cannot use these poles. These poles are muksa. And so I'll put my arm on your shoulder. You'll put my arm on our shoulder, and the goat will be hanging from our arms. But we can't. We cannot use the sticks because the sticks are muksa. A third Mishnah, as we are now on the top of Kuchav Dalam Adalav, Glustra Dinan. Nagashiyesh Barosho Glustra Rabbi Yeshua Amar Shomtom in a Pesach Zevetola Bechaveru B'Shabbos. That one can take the one could take the bolt that's used to bolt the door, and it's got some sort of knot on the end, and you could take the bolt on the door, but you can only drag it. You cannot move it on Shabbos. Rabbi Yeshua Amar Shomtom in Pesach Zevetola Bechaveru. You can take it from one door, move it to the other door, b'Shabbos. Rabbi Tarfon Amar Harehu Kechol Akel Umetalta B'Chatzer, and Rabbi Tarfon's of the position that you can move it, around like any other item. Now, exactly what the issue is over here. So, for our purposes right now, suffice to say that the idea is over here is that this is an item that even though it's a kli, but you cannot move it on Shabbos, And it's muksa lagamre, at least within the shita of Rabbi Yoshua. And finally, meducha, we're talking about now the pestle, hadamar, and we've gone over also the idea of the pestle. And the idea is, we'll stop over here, but the idea is that these four mishnayos, which simply disallow moving these items at all on Shabbos, so all these four mishnayos, according to Rabbi Lazar, take us back to the period of Nechemiah ben Chachliai, when Muksa was originally presented in this very severe fashion where basically you cannot move any kli. And these Mishnayos are old and in context. You can only hear this in context. And these are antiquated Mishnayos which only are presenting the viewpoint of when Muksa was originally laid out. However, as they scaled back Muksa where they gave allowances by Muksas, eventually four rounds of allowances, to the point where all kalim can be moved on Shabbos, so then these mishnayos become now outdated because they were only reflecting what muksa looked like at the time of the Navi Nechemya. That is the thesis both of Rebbe Lazar and the thesis of Rebbe Chanina. And when we finish up the sugya tomorrow, we're going to see whether or not other amoraim necessarily agree with this thesis. Let us quickly recap a daf today. We started off our daf today by a basic machlokas amarim, whether or not a klishal machlokas lisser is allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbah. Rabbah's of the opinion that klishal machlokas lisser, you are allowed to move on Shabbos. You're allowed to move it to Sarach Gufo. And then later in the morning, we talked about Sarach Mekomo. But at least in the first round of our discussion, you're allowed to move it to Sarach Gufo. The Gemara on the top of Kuch of Gimel Amid Aleph asked questions based on the Mishnayos regarding the pestle and regarding the Eli. all right, the cutting board, the pounding board, where those are items that you're not allowed to move on Shabbos. The Gemara says that that may fall under the category of a kli, which is muksa machmas chisaron kis. A person is so particular about those items, he does not use them for any other purpose. We saw on Kufra Gimel and Aleph a debate in terms of a kli shemalach to le'iser. How particular do you have to be over an item in order for it to fall under the category of muksa machmas chisaron kis? So we talked about hammers that were used for the goldsmith. We're talking about hammers that were used for pounding spices. Tiltum and Asad, briefly we discussed this morning the idea of what if I'm moving an item that's muksa, but I'm moving it indirectly. Is that going to be okay? Rav Nachman ends up saying yes, that would be okay. We had a discussion on the Amud Aleph this morning regarding the definition of a kli as it relates to Tumah, and the definition of the kli as it relates to Shabbos and Muktzah, and do those definitions work hand in hand? Are they running parallel one with the other? So this was a machlokes between Abai and Rava. Abai says they do not have to run parallel one with another, and Rava says they do have to run parallel one with the other. And then we briefly on the bottom of the Amud Aleph talked about the alignment of a child, the newborn, where there was a practice where after the child was born, so they would go through some sort of manipulation of the joints of the child, and whether or not this is a practice that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, discussion between Rav Sheshet and Rav Nachman, and the toothpick of our Mishnah, using the needle of the toothpick for our Mishnah, may weigh into the conversation, which is why the Gemara brought it up over here. On the Amud Beis today, we talked briefly about a stick, the stick that you got from the olive tree, the some sort of reed from the olive tree. So whether or not you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, you are. Whether or not it's going to be makabel tumah depends on whether it has a knot or does not have a knot. And a brief discussion in the Gemara in terms of is in the pshute kli eitz and therefore it's not going to be makabel tumah. And the Gemara says no, because with a knot you can basically use it like a dipstick, and it kind of does have a toch. And then the Mishnah that we saw, the second Mishnah on the Amud Beis today, spoke about kol ha-kelim nitalin, that you can use all kelim on Shabbos except for the masar hagadol and the asei shel machareisha, except for the large saw and the peg that's used for the plowing. And these items you cannot use because they are a kli that is muksa machmas chisaron kis. Quickly, the Gemara went through other items that are considered kli, that are considered kalim, that are muksa machmas chisaron kis. And then the big discussion on the Amud Beis today was regarding the history of muksa. When muksa was originally laid out by Nehemiah, because Shabbos observance was so poor when we came first back into Eretz Yisrael, so Nehemiah gave labeled muksa to everything. Everything had muksa status, and you couldn't move anything. The only question was, what can I move? And then they scale back on it, four rounds of scaling back till you get to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah that call a kalim, you tell them that you can move all kalim. Now, how exactly are the stages of muks in terms of how they're rolled back? So that was a machlokes between Abaye and Rava. Abaye had his version of the stages, Rava had his version of the stages. Where do they end up on Abaye and Rava? So Rava ends up being a little bit more makel than Abaye in terms of how you landed, in terms of what was eventually allowed on muksa. And in our final discussion today is that the Mishnayos that describe items that cannot be moved on Shabbos at all, so at least according to a couple of Amorayim, notably Rav Elazar and Rabbi Chanina, these are ancient Mishnayos, ancient meaning going back to the time of Nehemiah, the Navi Nehemiah, where these Mishnayos are reflecting the viewpoint that was given at the time of Nehemiah. And these Mishnayos, therefore, are no longer halachically binding because we end up becoming more mako as it relates to muksa. Adkan.